Please be seated.
So thank you everyone for accommodating my request for a late start. That was very helpful. Starting at 10 o'clock, we've got a lot of work, as you can imagine, that happens both in front of the court and behind the scenes in terms of supporting and keeping this case running. So, anything arising overnight?
The only loose end I have, Your Honour, relates to the proposed regional policy statement.
Is that a loose end?
Yes.
That's not a good start.
It's a loose end insofar as I had offered to have hard copies produced for the court's benefit, and I now have those. I'm minded to provide those.
You've not notified it, though, have you?
This is the partially operative.
Oh, this is the partially operative.
Yes, no, I was getting 2 months ahead of myself. This is the partially operative, the 15 March version that we had up on the screen at one point.
Oh, okay, and we haven't got that in the bundle?
It's not in the bundle.
Okay, no, that's fine. So I'll admit that into the bundle as it's been referred to in the evidence and also examination.
Yes, mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't have common bundle numbers stamped on it yet.
It's not a real problem for me.
The document itself has page number, so it could be put under a tab at the end of the bundle and
that's
at least know where it is. So we'll provide that to the registrar.
That'd be good.
Very good.
All right, thank you. Anything for you arising overnight?
No, Your Honour. Right. I'm not the representative for COS, but I have offered to assist them today in terms of swearing.
I understand that as well. Okay, and thank you very much for helping out on that too.
No problem.
All right, so we are now in COS hands. In terms of the, I think there is to be a short opening statement.
No, I believe Mr. Sol will be sworn in, and then he will just speak from his perspective as an advocate and a witness.
Okay.
So, Mr. Sol.
God, that the evidence you're about to give to this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Sol, do you confirm that your full name is Matthew James Sol?
Yes, I do.
And that you've prepared a statement of evidence dated 5 February 2021 for the purpose of this hearing?
Yes, I have.
Are there any corrections that you wish to make to your statement of evidence from February?
Just on point 28, I've just elaborated at the end of that statement.
Was that paragraph 28?
Paragraph 28.
Yeah. Yes.
And I've added fit for purpose with a holistic systems approach as opposed to reductionism, or siloed reductionism.
So you want to add to the bottom of paragraph 58 a new provision, G, is it? Or something?
No, just adding on to paragraph 28. I think Plan Change 7 will provide time to produce a land and water management plan. And I'm adding fit for purpose with a holistic systems approach as opposed to siloed reductionism.
Thank you. And with those corrections, do you confirm that your evidence is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes, I do.
And have you prepared a summary statement of your evidence?
Yes, I have.
And you have also prepared, I understand, a PowerPoint presentation of the photos that were in your statement of evidence. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you.
Can you now please read out your summary for the court and then remain for any questions that they may have?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. My name is Matthew James Sowell. Through COSA's respective submissions, we are giving voice to the Manuhirikia Rohi and her many tributary catchments of creeks, streams and rivers, the living arteries for this terrestrial life-sustaining land. We have three members of the Central Otago Environmental Society speaking to their summary of written submissions and evidence. First, myself, archaeologist, naturalist, father, grandfather residing in the Manuhirikia, followed by Gillian Sutherland, mother, grandmother, writer, home builder and Ida Valley resident, and finally Phil Murray, consultant in natural resource management, keen kayaker, resident in Clyde with two children, now adults, who have represented New Zealand in kayaking overseas. The statements provided by COSE have a focus on the Manuhirikia because it's where we live and it's at the forefront of our minds. We fully acknowledge that Plan Change 7 will have impacts outside of the Manuhirikia, with much of what we discuss being relevant to the other catchments. We support the temporary short-term consenting mechanism as an interim holding step while a new water and land plan is prepared and implemented to give effect to the National Policy Statement Freshwater 2020. Our focus in relation to supporting Plan Change 7 uses our experiences and observations with the Manuhirikia Rohi, the Kaitahu spelling, where we largely reside. Through our evidence and observations provided below, we are speaking and giving voice to the Manuhirikia and her tributaries over the loss and degradation of being that we have experienced and noted over many years. Through sustained engagement with OIC and irrigator-led community workshops and working groups, we are frustrated and disillusioned with the lack of meaningful understanding and explanation of the ecological needs and functional requirements of a pre-abstracted, naturalised Manuhirikia Rohi. Of concern is the division and time-consuming debate caused by the lack of understanding on ecological functional needs, robust baselines and incongruous monitoring and data to meaningfully understand the function and life-supporting needs of our Manuhirikia and its catchment tributaries. This is critical in order to manage sustainably the environmental needs of the catchment and make appropriate allocations for community function, well-being and a steady state economy without sacrificing ecological health and function of the Manuhirikia Rohi. We understand the human need for water, but we as community members have not been provided with the knowledge and understanding on ecological needs and life-sustaining operational thresholds for the Manuhirikia and her tributaries. Without the pre-abstraction, naturalised needs of the river being understood, assessed and benchmarks, we do not have a basis on which to consider what the Manuhirikia and her tributaries can provision us with for our human needs. We cannot determine the abstraction capacity until we know and understand the river's ecological life supportive needs and benchmarks. The Manuhirikia Rohi has a history of over-allocation for over 100 years, as mining privileges are the primary legal means used to allocate water in the catchment. Mining privileges were allocated with little or no understanding of the Manuhirikia and its catchment tributary systems and without regard for ecological, hydrological function or in-stream values. Progress is being made by land users on runoff and more efficient water application. However, our observations are these gains in water efficiency are being directed to more land modification under irrigation as opposed to reducing abstraction and restoring waterway ecological function. the need to provide environmental flows and restore ecological and hydrological river and tributary function has been clearly signalled with a 30-year timeframe. As a layperson, the best means I have of assessing and monitoring for aquatic ecological ecosystem health is the stark contrast in river and stream vitality and health in the headwater catchments outside of the modified valley floor, where I can and do drink, swim, absorb, and revel in the vital, life-giving properties of nature's own. From the evidence, our observations and monitoring of the Manuhirikia Roe, we show that it is over-allocated or over-extracted, degraded in ecological function, and has at times severely reduced in ecological energy and productivity. There is poor understanding of the catchment valley's naturalised state when contrasted with the health and quality and ecological function and vitality of the Manuhirikia headwaters and her tributaries. Meaningful ecological thresholds and benchmarks for naturalised ecological function and life-sustaining needs of the Manuhirikia and her tributaries appear non-existent as a first-order priority. These are essential to assessing and determining the environmental effects of second-order essential needs of the community and then third-order ability of the people and communities to provide for their social, economic and cultural well-being now and into the future. It is the view of the Central Otago Environmental Society that the current ORC water plan, as per the Skelton report, is not fit for purpose. This position is informed by multiple expert planners in this hearing. Plan Change 7 will provide time to produce a land and water plan fit for purpose with a holistic systems approach as opposed to the siloed reductionist approach. Thank you for providing the opportunity to present today. I'm happy to respond to questions you may have, and I have a PowerPoint available of the images I've referenced in my evidence. And I would, if I may indulge the court, I would like to read this quote from David Suzuki. The way we see the world shapes the way we treat it. If a mountain is a deity, not a pile of ore, if a river is one of the veins of the land, not potential irrigation water, if a forest is sacred, a sacred grove, not timber, if other species are biological kin, not resources, or if the planet is our mother, not an opportunity, then we will treat each other with greater respect. This is the challenge, to look at the world from a different perspective.
Thank you, and I take your point. Words mean absolutely everything in terms of the messaging. Both overt and underneath the words themselves. Now, did you want to take us through those photographs? Or is that better for another witness?
There's just one or two key points I'd like to highlight. This is land over the road from where I live. And it's been cultivated four times this season. And I have been monitoring it during rain events, and this is one sequence of four that I've recorded.
When you say cultivated four times this season, how long is the season? What season are you referring to?
I'm talking from last winter.
Yeah.
So it's had a winter feed crop, two grain crops.
Right.
So, sorry, that's three, not four.
Three, okay, all right.
And they basically, it's herbiciding, direct drilling. And I've just been monitoring the silt sediment in rain events, and I've got four sequences. And so on the left, you have the sediment coming from the property across the road. And on the right, is runoff from the same rain event from uncultivated land. And as I say, I've got a succession of three or four sets of this, of rain events around about three quarters of an inch.
Right. Okay.
And this is a photo of the Dunstan Creek in a rain event on the 29th of June. And we can still see the wet bed gravels and things are still visible. And then this is the same river where it joins the Manuhirakea. And this is after it's come through the farmed or intensively grazed valley floor with high sediment load, and it's about 20 minutes later. And this sequence here is the Thompson's Creek, totally abstracted on the left, and that was the case for over a fortnight. It was totally dewatered. And I have in my report the ORC river flow data that shows the sequence of water flows over that period in there. So, you know, the ecological function of Thompson Creek for a fortnight was without water. And this is just an interesting perspective. This is some history. We don't see this so often now anymore. This is people swimming in 1975 in the Manuhirakea in Alexandra. And this slide here is that this is a, I can't read it from here, 1884 survey plan. And this is a section showing the wetlands that existed on, we now know it as Thompson's Creek, then it was known as Spotters Creek. But basically, it has been extensively modified, and it bears out the fact that the New Zealand statistic for wetlands is that we now are down to the last 10% of wetlands in New Zealand. But this is just an example of showing the loss of wetlands in the Omakau area over time. This example here is... can't see the date. Can somebody help me here? Oh, 1980. So this is a section of riverbed just upstream of Omakau. And at that stage, it was sheep grazing with some wild flood irrigation. This is the same piece of land now with intensive dairying on those gravel previous braided river braids. So it shows you the confining and constraining of the river.
Can you flick back to the previous slide so I can see what you mean by confining and constraining river?
You can see that out to the road was largely in the place of floodplain.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
And now it's an intensive agriculture, and the river is reduced in its ability to perform as a wild river.
Insofar as there is armouring of the banks of that braided river, or insofar as land use has changed?
Definitely land use has changed.
Yeah.
And that land use is on a very leaky system.
Yeah, well, an unconfined aquifer, is that what you mean? Underneath the braided river systems? No, I understand that. But I was just curious as to why you should say that the river system's now confined. Aren't they just simply dairy farming on a floodplain? Or are you saying that there's stop banks and other armouring going on there?
I can't answer that question.
Yeah, okay.
And this is just an example of the Galloway irrigation scheme and its take and what it's left as a residual flow in the river. And the arrow is the residual flow left for supposed ecological function of the Manuhirakea below that point.
And the shingle bank, that's...
that's the bund that's to capture
the water,
the irrigation take.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And that's looking downstream, and if we can... This photo here is an indication of what the irrigation scheme's use of the water does. On the left, we've got Manuhirikia at campground, and if you look towards the right, it's largely flat-lined in that yellow area. And the diagram on the right is Dunstan Creek, and it shows the unimpeded natural fluctuations over the same time period. And the Dunstan Creek is a fairly good indicator of what the Manuhirikia, how it would behave in a natural, unaffected state through irrigation abstraction.
Is that something you know or something you've been told?
I would have to get the research papers, but there was some research done to look at how the Manuhirikia would function. And they did work on the Dunstan catchment, and they attribute the ramping rates and things would be similar to the Manuhirikia if Falls Dam wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this is the nearest we have to what the Manuhirikia would behave like if we took Falls Dam out of the equation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's an aerial photo of that tape that I was talking about, the Galloway irrigation tape.
So Galloway, if you like, in terms of that slide, for the record, labelled page 20, Manuhirikia, Galloway irrigation tape, March 2019, are you saying that to the left is water body where water continues to flow, that is flowing now to the take for the irrigation scheme?
Yes.
And to the right, where water remains within the water body, which looks to be a gravity, quite an extensive gravity bed, that is the water, the flow in the river?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And I think that's the end of my slides. Mm.
Now, was that was in your evidence? I know I've seen
these
before.
These are all from my evidence.
Yeah, no, that's it. Good.
Oh, except the only one that's not is that one, the shot comparing the two different flow regimes of Dunstan Creek versus that is not in my evidence.
Okay, so probably just we'll grab a copy of all of those slides again for the record so that everyone can see what we've been looking at. All right, and I have a question for you. Before I have my questions for you, has Mr Moore got any questions for you? Mr Moore is the lawyer for RIC.
Good morning. Just one question arose in relation to the slides that you showed. You showed a slide with some runoff from a paddock that had been cultivated. Was that paddock under irrigation or was that a non-irrigated land use?
It is occasionally irrigated by a big gun, but most of the time it is it's not irrigated.
Thank you. That's my only question.
All right. Any re-examination on that basis?
No? Kia ora.
Okay. So one or more parties will say, and indeed have seen, that they are looking for a merits-based long-term consents to be included in PC7 or for PC7 to be rejected and therefore allow resource consent applications to be processed in the usual fashion under the water plan, to deal with the concerns that you have illustrated through these slides. For example, Thompson's Creek, if you want to avert what is happening at Thompson's Creek, and your slide shows a dewatering of Thompson's Creek, and your evidence was dewatered on that occasion for a period of 2 weeks, then consent holders, some parties would say, well, let us apply for resource consent and we can ensure that there are appropriate minimum flows, recession flows, secession conditions and all of the other suite conditions that can be brought to bear so that that event does not occur. What's your response to that? So this is amending Plan Change 7 to allow applications for resource consent to be processed under Plan Change 7 for long-term consents whatever that means, but it means at least for some parties 20 years plus.
I guess my concern is I don't believe I've been made aware or shown the information of what those, how Thompson's Creek functioned pre-abstraction. And I think one of the things I struggle with is while we talk about the water plan, what we do on the land has a very significant effect. And so I think it's more than just water allocation and water takes. We're dealing here with a whole complex terrestrial and aquatic system. And what I struggle with is that we tend to separate the two. And I guess that's what I'm trying to show with the sedimentation issue. While we've improved to direct drilling and things, I still believe, from my observations, that we don't know enough about the effects of what we do on the land and therefore the implications on our water takes. And
right, and so the siloing that you're talking about in your evidence is the siloing of water from land. And the use of land.
It's also siloing in terms of the fixation with galaxids.
Yeah, go and tell me a bit more about that.
I mean, galaxids are only one element. Probably the best example I can give you is like in the CODC plan, farmers are allowed as of right to spray Matagari. But the problem with that is that fair enough, Matagari has an impact on the farming regime, but Matagari is not Matagari on its own. It's a whole ecological system that supports lizards, birds, insects, and a whole array of other species. It's not just total Matagari, but also that Matagari, or we'll call it grey shrubland regime, has a carbon sequestering role. It has a water harvesting and water interception role. I believe that the land that we're looking at now is vastly different. I work as an archaeologist, and if you read the early diary accounts of the early pastoral farmers coming in here, they used to lose their dairy cow, their farm dairy milk sign, in the shrublands. Living on the banks of the Manuhiri here at Galloway. Well, that's a vastly different ecological regime compared to what's there now. And I think because we don't understand, we look at things in just the recent 10 years rather than what we've done over the last 150 years, I think we come to the wrong conclusions.
And so the risk in having a single focus on galaxids is what? Again, can you expand that?
Well, my point is that the galaxids, it's also about the habitat that they need to survive. And we're making a particular point on the galaxid habitat, but what about all the other invertebrates and what about in the past there was Enunga and other species, but we're fixated just now on what's remaining rather than looking at what was. And if we were managing our rivers to their naturalised state, what could we get back, or what would be the ecological function?
You also talk about Falls Dam in your evidence at paragraph 48. And you say many dam structures like Falls Dams are past their design life, with little seismic design included in their construction. And then you talk about Falls Dam being under deferred maintenance liabilities and design deficiencies.
That's all referenced in two OPIS reports.
Yeah. And again, that fact that dams are beyond their design life with little seismic design included in the construction is used by some to say, therefore, we want a long-term permit because there are health and safety issues arising in relation to the continuation of those dams, but people are unlikely to invest in their reconstruction or get on with deferred maintenance unless there's a long-term permit associated with water takes and diversions, which might also apply to those dams. So, you know, to fill the dams. So what do you say about that then?
That could take a while.
You take your time because, as thus far, again, we've still got 3 weeks of hearing to go, but we haven't heard a lot of evidence about dams. And really, I'm trying to draw out your own personal experience rather than things that people might have said to you, you know, anecdotally.
Hmm. Or reported. I come back to the point I've been making. If we are going to look at a replacement dam, we need to understand fully the impacts on the ecological function of the river.
Mm.
The situation we've got is Falls Dam is only one of many, all built relatively around in the 1930s, and they were actually employment schemes of the government.
Mm.
And it was to, to supposedly improve the productivity of the land. If you read through the history of the Ministry of Works, there was a continuous, disagreement between the irrigators and the Ministry of Works required on the amount of maintenance to maintain these systems going into the future. The government decided that there was, to hand those on over to the irrigators, but there was an incredible amount of deferred maintenance. These schemes, unless they're maintained, require, and concrete doesn't last forever.
Mm.
And so we've gone from a scheme that was basically publicly funded, and now we're in an environment where it's user pays and the free market applies. And so I guess the difficulty I have with all of this is what is the public good component of these things versus what is the private, gain. And I don't believe we're given enough information. I mean, I've been involved in the various working groups that the irrigators have, arranged, and they've done, put in a huge amount of work investigating all the various options.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, the irrigators themselves weren't prepared to put up any more money to fund a larger dam.
You're talking about Falls Dam?
Yes.
Yeah.
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 And so I think the rub comes in that they haven't got enough of money among themselves, or they're not prepared to commit. It's then, there's the community aspect. Is there merit in the community engaging with, a new dam? But again, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud here because I've been involved in the farmer negotiations, and I guess for them the economic decision is that, they only have so much money, and they. The corollary to that is that I've also seen in the last 4 years a sheep farm being converted heavily over to dairy support, and it all now has pivots and things, and that's all, and they've built dams, and that's all gone ahead, being fully aware of plan change 7 in the water plan changes. Mm. So, I guess people make their choices on the information they have at hand, and I guess, the funds that they've got available to them.
And in that example that you've given, when you say they've built their dams, you're talking about on-farm storage ponds.
Yep, totally. Okay.
And Falls Dam, which I haven't seen, is a bit bigger than an on-farm storage pond
together. Totally. But to be fair, there's some pretty big on-farm storage farms, reservoirs being built. If you do take the trip to Falls Dam, you'll see some very large ones just underneath Blackstone Hill.
All right. And so the issue with Falls Dam, you note in your evidence, has been its need for maintenance has been ongoing since 2013 or earlier than that? Again? You're not sure?
I'd have to reread there's two very good reports on that.
And the debate in the community, farming community and broader sector, which have been engaged with Falls Dam, is whether to replace with a bigger dam or to maintain that dam, deferred maintenance. That's essentially what the debate has been.
Yep.
Okay. With a decision made by those who would fund the rebuild for a larger dam, not to take that course of action. That seems, is that what you're saying?
I think
the decision
I can't speak for the farmers, but my understanding is it was for them not financially viable.
Okay.
Put it this way, they didn't vote for it. So
didn't vote for it. And when was that vote taken? The vote that you're talking about?
Would be 3 years ago now.
About 3 years ago. Okay. Yeah. Alrighty.
It's all under the Manuherikia Water Catchment Strategy Group. There's a whole website with huge amount of reports and.
Well, those are the questions that I've had. Commissioner, have you got any questions?
Yes, just make sure that I've got the right set of evidence here. Just your paragraph 40, where you talked about views. You talked about defining roadway viewpoints, and you mentioned some views, but we haven't got photographs of all of.
Oh, sorry.
Or any of those views, presumably.
I do have photographs, but I haven't put them in the report.
Well, I suppose my question more was we do have a site visit, and it may be that we're going by some of these places. I don't know at this point. They may be not on now. Itinerary, but I just wondered whether the locations would be clear enough when you just refer to above Butcher's Dam, for example. Is that pretty obvious if you're on Highway A?
It's the view you get, travelling from Dunedin, and you come out into the Manuherikia Basin, and you look right down the valley, and you see the Hawktons. Probably best illustrated in the wintertime when the Hawktons are all capped, but that was the one that stuck in my mind when I first arrived here.
Pretty obvious, is it?
It's just if you can remember Butcher's Dam, and you'll come along beside Butcher's Dam, and then you'll come up to a small rise, and then the view opens right out. Or there is one just a bit further back from Butcher's Dam, still on the same highway, and it's just a higher perspective, and you get that first initial vista of, so you can see out over to Clyde Alex and then up to the Manuherikia.
Right. So I might even have taken a photograph of that myself in the past.
And the other
now,
one is Black
but
Hill.
Is there a place to pull off the highway there, or?
I did suggest it to the council that would be a good place to put a stop, but no.
No.
They're both quite highway hazardous.
Right, okay, yes, I do remember taking some photographs in highway hazardous situations.
You're supposed to be concentrating on your driving, but...
So, just thinking, the next one then, the view west of Blacks Hill from the Ida Valley.
Yeah, so that's, you've come up from the Ida Valley, you're coming over Blacks Hill and you're looking out, so you're getting a cross-sectional view across, or you've got the Mahinerikia Valley upstream and downstream, and then beyond that you see the hectares and the remarkables. It's a pretty iconic view, particularly stunning in the early morning or the early evening.
Mm-hmm. And then the next one was the view either way when travelling below Pennywaite's Hill. That wasn't so, something I'd ever heard of. So
right. So Pennywaite's is you're coming from the Ida Valley, and you're coming. Just past Home Hills, and then you rise over a wee low saddle and then it opens out again. But then you're looking up into the headwaters of the Mahinerikia. You're looking along the Hawkden Faces. You're looking at Mount St. Bathans, and you can see up both the headwaters of the Mahinerikia east and west branches and up into Dunstan Creek. So that's the real headwaters of the Mahinerikia.
Right, okay.
Did you want to put those on our list?
Well, I'm not sure how any of that will work out, but yeah. I just wondered if it was possible for you to annotate them on a map.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
could do that.
And give us a bit of a sweep.
If we've got time, we might take it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just thought. Thank you for that.
Okay. No, I suppose just the bottom line is you support the plan change. Is that right?
Yep.
And you're tracking through with changes on the plan change, I take it. Recommended changes. I mean, obviously, there's no decisions yet.
Yeah, I've had a real struggle. I've got atrocious. My broadband has just collapsed, and I've been dying to watch the video and the photo. I just can't. So I've been looking at the PDFs.
The joint witness statements, probably the thing to be. Mm. Really keeping an eye on. And you've got any comments about anything that you've seen in terms of the expert conferencing? And
not really, because I haven't been able to get fully across it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and it's been a real disappointment from my perspective, not been able to. But I've been battling with a broadband supplier for 6 weeks now. So.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
There's many things I can do, but I can't help you out there.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So, it has been a disappointment not to be better across the discussions, but, yeah.
Anywho, anything else you want to add?
No, okay. Just thank you very much for the opportunity to be heard and to contribute. Mm.
No, thank you very much. All right, thank you.
Thank you. The next witness is Ms. Sullivan. Mm-hmm. Do you confirm that your full name is Gillian Ruth Sullivan?
Yes.
And that you've prepared a statement of evidence dated 5 February 2021?
Yes.
Are there any corrections that you would like to make to that statement from the 5th of February?
No. I need to point out that I've just done a 2-page summary of that.
Great. Yes, the court has a 2-page summary. So in terms of your evidence from the 5th of February, can you confirm that that's true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Great. You can now read to your summary, please, and take the court through your PowerPoint slides if you wish to.
Okay, thank you. Is it okay if I stand?
Yes, you do what you feel comfortable with. Yep.
Okay. Let's see if I can work this. Okay. Kia ora, my name is Gillian Sullivan. I'm a mother, grandmother, writer, natural home builder and Ida Valley land steward. I'm also speaking as secretary of the Central Otago Environmental Society, and I thank you for this opportunity. As a layperson, my witness to the health of the Manuhirikia comes from walking the river for 7 days over 4 months, from its source in the mountains to the confluence with the Clutha Mata'o, repeating sections of the river at a level of less than 1 cubic flow, as well as walking much of the tributaries Idaburn, Rocks Creek and Dunstan Creek. There is no one alive who has seen the Manuhirikia River as it was, flowing in its own strength from under the Hawkden Mountains and Mount St. Bathans till it slides into the Clutha Mata'o near Alexandra. Since the days of gold, we have cut channels and leaked the river's water so that in places it turns from tumbling alpine river into a stream, from glassy waves to sluggish and shallow. And that is why 1 week in January 2019, a group of scientists, freshwater ecologists and hydrologists came to walk beside the river to count each step of run, riffle, pool, to note each habitat, to be with the river its whole length. The following visual and prose reflection shows the difference between when the river and the streams have a strong natural flow and when they are dewatered, lending credence to the case for Plan Change 7, that the river needs protection until the new water and land plan is prepared and implemented to give effect to the MPS FW 2020. Photo number one is the Manuhirikia above the falls dam, Tumana Otiwai. In the upper reaches of the river, it is the river's voice I feel with my skin, my cheeks, my ribs, my heart. For the water knows nothing of what is to come, only from where it has come. Waterfall, spring, stream, cleft, into this. A ripple tumble so vociferous and glassy and light-filled, so clattery and fresh, that to step into its wild push is to feel as if I too have come from gleam of snow and will end in the wide surge of sea. In the beginning, every flank of hill had a crevice where water ran down, and through matagari, wetlands, grasses and bunchy snow tussock, the water found the stream, and the stream gurgled, deepened, ran away down the valley, the air chilled with the smell of wet grass and rock. My eyes and my heart followed the stream under the track and upwards, where the golden hills came together, and beyond them was only sky. There, in a silver thread, the Manuhirikia began, up there in the silence and the rain. Following the river from those alpine clarity beginnings, the power of the water as I ford it, feet slipping on boulders, and through the long length of braided strands, where the pale, dried silt-covered rocks glare in the sun, and the way seems interminable to the far willows. The river each side clattering, gliding, making forays towards itself in shallow, wide ripples, joining one braid, then parting, then joining, singing all the while. From Loop Road Bridge, the river accompanies us with its tumbling and rushing in long stretches of ripples. The air is mineral-scented from the wet rocks and water sparks. The rocks are slabby sandstone and rounded river boulders. On the banks, tussock, briar rose, thistle, broom, buttercup, bugloss, woolly mullein and rushes. In the warm air, their fragrance rises. The river turns through the valley, that sequence of riffle, glide, pool, over and over, each turn a new vision of light on water, in the continual voice of the river, rushing and clattering. There are times of peace, quiet enough in a glide to hear the quail snickering, or to watch a single blue-grey heron turn and soar on outstretched wings and come into land on stones. Wait a minute. One minute. This is the Manuhirikia after the water take at the Galloway. Today, when we walked the Manuhirikia at a 1 cubic flow, less than half the flow of the last walk, the wonder has gone. There is no magic about the next corner or the next ripple pulling at our legs. When we come to the Galloway intake, two-thirds of the already depleted river has been shunted off to the side by bulldozed banks for the irrigation intake. We know it is two-thirds because the hydrologist, who is waist-deep in the irrigation channel measuring cross-sections, tells us. Over to the right, the main stem of the Manuhirikia limps on. It is a stream I step across in two steps. All the consent asks of the irrigation company is that a river 15 centimetres deep and 30 centimetres wide is left for the public's recreation. This is the Manuhirikia near the confluence, just a few metres back from the Clutha Mata'o, April 2019. It is autumn when I come to the last stretch of the river. What had been summer and long hot days on the stones, the pools beckoning under the willows, has turned to frost in the mornings. Beside me, the water deepens to a depth I cannot see. The silt is packed between the stones so that my footfall is cushioned by mud. The river is deep, quiet, mysterious. It holds the soil washed down from the tributaries and from the newly ploughed fields for the winter brassicas. It holds whatever has been put on the soil. The water holding wounds deep within, yet moving regally, elegant and gracious and alone. Its bright promise as a silver tumbling thread through tussock under a sky that only saw hill and hawk and rock to this. Aged and slow and laden. These photos are of the Ida Burn before and after a water take, January 2019. And I thank the landowner for giving me access up on his farm. And I followed the Ida Burn as far as I could through sheep country where it wasn't affected, but then it joins with Hills Creek and Gorge Creek. And I'll show you the photo of how it ends up in Otirihua, which is, this is the stream behind my place. This is what it looks like. This is the same week that tumbling alpine stream, that was the same stream. All day in a path of water, a rippling cloud of a stream, clean as the stones beneath. Keep singing water over the stones. Below and much too soon, a pipe shuts off your crystal celebration. Stream, you are like us now, bereft of source. So maybe 2 minutes walk from that tumbling stream, the water take comes off and it goes underground. So it's only a few minutes from that to that, from those two views.
Mm. And again, do you know, because I haven't been particularly keeping a check on the site visits, but do you know whether any of these locations are in the site visit that the court is to undertake? So I think we're doing flyover and we might be doing a desktop. I'm not sure that is a desktop flyover.
I'm not sure if that you would be going up the Ida Burn, which goes up under Mount Ida.
Mm.
It's one of the tributaries. When I was walking it, I honestly felt like I was in heaven.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was the water tank around the corner. It was the most blissful day I'd spent walking, and I couldn't understand how that stream ended up the way it is in Otorihua.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of... The other two streams come through different farms, and there's a lot of... There's been a lot of clearing, but I can't explain it, and I hope the ORC one day will work out what's happened to the Eiderburn. But I think some of the landowners are going to set up a catchment group, and hopefully we can find out. But it mimics what's happening. My photos of the Manirikia from those beautiful alpine beginnings to that silt-laden... what happens at the end, you know. So to see it in its purity and to see what we do to it is quite shocking when you do it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So that's the Eiderburn. This is the confluence of the east and west branches of the Manahirikia. Where we organised a public walk to go there, and you can stand in the river and you can feel the east branch on one leg and the west on the other. They feel different. The west is a colder, swifter one. So I'll end on that photo. I've seen the river at its beginnings, at the tributaries falling silver from the mountains, the Eiderburn, Rocks Creek and Dunstan. I've seen the wild shags on rock cliffs, the dart and joy of young fish in clear pools over clean stones, and felt the surge and thrust of the stream through stretches of tussock and rock, over boulders that glisten golden or white pierced through with green. In the wide expanse of tussock lands and through rocky valleys, the streams come to the river. I hold in my mind the whole length of the Manahirikia. To know the river like this, each step of it, to be beside it, to merge with the water, to be in its ripple and sing hour after hour after hour, is to know one thing, and that is this. The river is its own being, and as such, has the inherent right to thrive. Ngā mihi nui.
Questions?
Just one question. What triggered this journey in 2019?
We were at a meeting of... there was the mayor and councillors and ORC, and we were talking about the river, and they said they were going to walk the river. The scientists had to count every footstep. So they asked... of all those who were interested in the river could accompany them, because we were walking for 8 or 9 hours a day, but they organised it all, so there were cars. All we had to do was turn up. So the first day I turned up and I was the only person apart from the scientist and a fish and game person. There was no irrigators or consultants or... But one day a farmer came, and one day a couple of consultants, and Matt and Brian came on different days. But I did the whole lot, and also from the east and west branches, and also the tributaries, because I wanted to understand the river, and I didn't know enough, so I just wanted to learn about it. Yeah, and I guess it was that offer from the scientists that started it.
So what was their purpose, do you know?
It's because they said they haven't walked the river. They only had snapshots of the river at this place or that, but they, as far as I'm aware, the scientists hadn't walked the river counting each... you would have to ask the ORC.
Yes,
but they realised that they didn't have the science and they had better start. Yeah. And they were quite free with what they were saying on it, that they wished that the work had been being done for the last 17 years, that we needed to have been doing that sort of work.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Your Honour.
Commissioner?
So is there one easy location where you would get this contrast between the headwaters and lower down the catchment? Well, I suppose I'm talking about two places, aren't I?
All right.
In your mind.
to get to a quite an easy place to feel that high country feel is if you are at the Loop Road Bridge, which goes around to St Bathins.
Yes, yeah, so, which I always get confused as to where the which side of the Loop Road you might be going.
So. Oh, okay. So if you there is a if you come from Otorohua towards St Bathins and you come to the just before you come to that bridge, there's a there's sort of an empty area with scrub, and you can drive in there a little way up the river and park, and go out through a gate, and you suddenly you are in. You can suddenly be away from civilization and see the river in quite a good state, I think. And then you would have to go down. Where would you recommend to go down, Matt, to see it?
Yeah, I mean, probably the Shaky Bridge as well.
Shaky Bridge and now it's...
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. So,
but that one off Loop Bridge is very easy to. You can drive. You can just drive it in from there. But Matt might be able to show you on a map. Or...
Well, yes. We'll ask that you do that. And again, I don't exactly know what's planned and whether we need to get in a car. And it's no problem just getting in a car and driving as well. So, but you would suggest Loop Road Bridge at St Bathins, and you could mark it on the map approximately the site that we're to go in, and Shaky Bridge at Alex. Okay.
Yeah.
For a good before and after contrast of the Manahera Kia.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, we can look at that. And Mr Cooper's furiously taking notes, and he knows what's required. So if you could put a map in, you know, maybe today, at the end of the day, so that'll be great. And we can pick that up. That is beautiful prose indeed. So I thank you for your evidence and for the perspective that you bring. Yeah.
Thank you very
much.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Your Honour, we'll be able to get some more specific locations that perhaps can be incorporated into the site visit for you today.
We'll see how we go. I expect it's a jam-packed schedule already, but if there's flexibility or, you know, if we need a bit more time, we'll try and take more time, even perhaps if it's on a weekend. So, yeah, but seeing those before and afters actually in the flesh, not from a helicopter or a desktop, it's a totally different experience altogether. So, you know, we'd be open to that.
Okay, thank you. The last witness is Mr. Murray.
I should also add that those slides, if they're not already in evidence, need to be just produced again, you know, perhaps at the end of the week. Most of the slides, I think, are in evidence, but just double-check.
And marked them all up as we went, so I thought we did have them all.
Oh, good, OK.
Because
so
I wanted to reference how they related to the summary statement, so I'm pretty confident.
No, make sure those are filed.
No, yeah. I think we think we've got them.
Oh, that's okay.
What the Commissioner's saying, so nothing more needs to be done.
Great. Yeah.
No, just a test. Yeah. No, just. Yeah. I do.
Thank you. Do you confirm that your full name is Philip Hunter Murray?
Aye, it is.
And that you've prepared a statement of evidence dated 5th of February 2021 on these proceedings?
I have.
Do you have any corrections you wish to make to that statement?
Oh, I've just got one small correction that I noticed the moment I pressed print for 10 copies.
On paragraph two there, I said I speak on behalf of Central Otago Environment Society, and just if you could put a line through and on, just put the line through on there for Central Otago Whitewater.
Okay. So no. And four.
Yes, and yeah. Four. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I'd just like to mention one small matter that when I filled out my 274 certificate, apparently I filled it out just in my own name, and it should have been in the name of the Central Otago of Coes and Central Otago Whitewater Incorporated. But I am speaking on behalf of those two groups.
Yeah, that's okay. I think there's just been a bit of an issue. Are you a party, not a party?
Yeah, so exactly.
But that was something that we could sort out by getting you to do a late application for 274. Yeah. And now you're making clear that it's not merely on behalf of yourself, but on behalf of Central Otago Environmental Society and also Centro Otago Whitewater.
Whitewater.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Murray, with that correction to your evidence, can you confirm it's true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do.
Thank you. And have you prepared a summary of your evidence?
I have.
You can now read that to the court and then remain for any questions they may have. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you. My name is Philip Murray. I speak on behalf of Central Otago Environment Society and for Central Otago Whitewater. I also speak as an individual who has a professional background in resource management and who has worked in land management in Otago for the past 35 years. I also speak as an individual who enjoys the natural environment and who took up whitewater kayaking with my children relatively late in life. Including many descents of the Ophir Gorge and the Manharakia. Not very skillfully, I might add. I survived. We support Plan Change 7 with respect to the temporary short-term consenting mechanism it proposes as an interim holding step while a new water and land plan is prepared and implemented to give effect to the National Policy Statement for Fresh Water 2020. Our concern is for water quality within the Manharakia River itself and its tributaries and for how this affects the ecological function of these water bodies. The ecological function of these water bodies in turn affects the recreational use of the Manharakia and more importantly affects the community's relationship with it. Our concern is also for the quantity and pattern of flow within the main stem of the Manharakia, as this has a direct effect on recreational use, particularly with respect to whitewater kayaking. Flow volume and flow pattern also has an effect on the ecological health of the river and its tributaries. Objective monitoring has shown that water quality within the wider Manharakia catchment has been steadily declining. There is clear evidence that farm development and land use intensification associated with irrigation has increased markedly over the past decade. There is a strong likelihood, in my opinion, that the two are linked. The current Otago Regional Council land use planning model relies heavily on an effects-based approach, which clearly has not provided the desired outcomes. Professor Skelton's 2019 report to the Ministry of the Environment concluded that the Council's planning framework is not fit for purpose. The Council needs time to establish a plan that meets the national standards for fresh water and the community's aspirations for its water bodies. There is a real need for change in the rural community in how much water is extracted for irrigation and how this water is used. Business as usual will not cut it, either in meeting the bottom line legal requirements or in meeting the community aspirations, if the whole community is to be taken into account. Plan Change 7 is essential as a holding mechanism to allow more information to be gathered, to allow a planning process to occur which provides for informed public input, and so that equitable outcomes between interested parties can be achieved. The current system of first up, best dressed, and devil take the hindmost in allocating water rights will not, in my opinion, result in equitable or resilient outcomes. Plan Change 7 must include within it a means of equitably reducing the current take rights under deemed permits, as it must be acknowledged that these rights over-allocate take for irrigation if resilient ecological function is to be achieved for the river and its tributaries. Consequently, I support as a minimum measure the clauses in Plan Change 7 that cap irrigation take to a maximum of the average over a five-year period. I would be in favour of specific reduction targets being set in place in the granting of short-term permits so that there is some certainty about progress being made within the period of short-term permits. Ecological and environmental effects should be a matter required to be considered in granting these short-term permits and for setting reduction targets. The current planning model relies on landowner self-monitoring of fertiliser inputs and discharge limits on a narrow range of nutrients. In my opinion, a combination of a rules-based approach, limiting stocking rates and certain land uses on more sensitive land classes, and landowner self-monitoring would be more robust. There are ecological benefits as well as recreational benefits from restoring the natural flow patterns to the Manuhirikia. Studies have shown that allowing periodic high flows during summer reduces algal build-up and improves macroinvertebrate health. Allowing periodic high flows in late spring and summer would extend the period in which kayakers could run the Ophir Gorge section of the Manuhirikia. The Manuhirikia is an important river for local kayakers, and kayaking is an important sport to the local community. Since the mid-80s, when kayak design and technology made such places as the Ophir Gorge readily paddleable, the sport has grown rapidly in popularity to a point where Dunson High School is one of the top schools in the country in kayak slalom. Finn Butcher, a local paddler who attended Dunson High School, is currently a reserve paddler for the New Zealand kayak slalom team for the upcoming Olympics, having missed out by mere split seconds. In conclusion, I support Plan Change 7 with amendments that provides a framework for the immediate addressing of the transition of deemed permits to RMA consents in a way that recognises the requirements to move towards a legal framework that provides for the restoration of the natural ecological function of the Manuhirikia and its tributaries for public use and recreation of the river system, and that will secure the long-term healthy function of the aquatic ecosystem. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Moore?
No, thank you, Your Honour.
Okay. The hearing, as you'd expect, this is the fifth week of the hearing. Things are, in some ways, are being shaped by the Regional Council, which, in a way that perhaps differs from your understanding of Plan Change 7 when it was notified. The technical experts and planning witnesses are not recommending that we remain with the maximum of maximum averages as being used as the basis for allocation. Have you been sort of tracking what the changes? Okay.
I haven't been keeping up with it.
Probably the first and most important thing to note, after the first week of the hearing, the council was invited by us to reflect on its plan change and to decide whether it was simply a process plan change. That is how to bridge the gap between a not fit for purpose regional plan and a plan which was fully compliant with the NPS for freshwater management, so a land and water plan to come. And whether that, what did that mean in that, what did that plan look like? Was it merely process, or was it process plus environmental outcomes? The region has said, regional council has said, it is process. So there's not an environmental ethos, if you like, save in the trying to cap the amount of water that may be used under deemed permits in particular. So, again, that differs from your understanding of perhaps where the regional council has got to. So its plan change now is very much a stripped-back affair. And then, having done that, subsequent parties are looking to build on the that stripped-back bare-bones plan, because that is what it is, build onto that. Do you want to comment on that, or have...
Well, I am disappointed to hear that, in that I would have liked to have seen within that that period of short-term permits making some progress and signalling to the community, the farming community, the changes that need to be made, and acknowledging in some way, some clear way, that it's not business as usual. I think it's a lost opportunity to actually move things towards where I think it needs to go, with a focus on ecological bottom lines and ecological function.
The signalling comes in the six-year consent. That is the strongest signal possible, that as to the possibility of change and the to come under a new land and water plan, under a new RPS as well. So signalling of that change and discouragement of continuing investment in irrigation infrastructure, where the reliability of that water and therefore the production from that asset is in jeopardy. So that's where the council has positioned itself. But a step too far to be trying to change the environment at the same time, because that then would require irrigators, abstractors, to invest in storage, and if there's a reliability issue coming out of that, or to invest in irrigation infrastructure to achieve an environmental outcome. That, for their perspective, would require longer term consents, and so then it starts to work against your objective of short term consents.
That's right.
A lot of these things.
I can see them.
Okay.
The problems there.
Yeah, and so given that you can see the problem there, can you see the limitation, I guess, which the region's now proposing, that this be principally a short term process focused plan change? That will assist abstractors get from their current operative plan to a fully compliant plan.
Yeah, well, I guess where I'll be looking for reassurance is in the land plan and the water plan process.
Yes. Now, Mr. Moore, have I mis-summarised anything in terms of where the regional council is presently sitting?
No, you're wrong.
Okay. All right. Okay, and I guess the place to read, if you're wanting things to read, and there's a fair amount out there that now could be read on the court's website, is perhaps the joint witness statements, where we've been referring experts into conferencing, looking around specific aspects of this plan change. You can find that on the website under the evidence or close to where the evidence is lodged, and that's the best place to be keeping yourself updated as to perhaps the recommendations coming through.
Sure. So I understand that it's been pared back to very much a a process-driven thing rather than actually a qualitative moving the community towards where I think they're going to need to go with a reduction in water take from deemed permits.
Yes, and that was seen as being necessary because whilst the plan change as notified was endeavouring to have some of that qualitative move towards a better environmental outcome, if I could put it that way, there was no objective, no supporting policies. That would have enabled.
That
would have articulated what your end goal was, exactly. And that was problematic.
I acknowledge that's a problem, but as I say, I guess having given up on making progress in the next 5 years, we will be very focused on that plan, having a good plan framework. Can I just make one point about kayaking that needs to be made for the record and is possibly not immediately relevant to Plan Change 7, but one of the characteristics that's not well understood about whitewater kayaking is that where most of the other recreations occur at low flow, at certainly not high flows, kayaking is an activity that does occur at periods of high flow, and therefore it occurs at rainfall periods where other people mightn't be recreating in the river. One of the characteristics of the data coming out of the Manukia is that it has high faecal coliform at periods of high flow. And the regional council, and there's been a general impression given that that isn't a problem because people aren't swimming in the river at that stage. It is one of the characteristics of kayaking that people are swimming in the river through kayaking in those periods of high flow, which would suggest that flow from into creeks from paddocks of dung is problematic, which would suggest the need for retrofitting farms to retrofit with decent berm areas under fenced off berm areas.
And with that in mind, I would also say that certainly there are some parties that are looking for longer term consents, or the opportunity to pursue longer term consents on the basis that if you want a good environmental outcome, that will require investment that does necessitate longer term consent. So some parties are nevertheless seeking to pursue those environmental goals, but but the quid pro quo, the price, is a longer term consent, and that makes sense also in terms of the investment which is required.
Sure.
So the door's not closed yet. The court has to consider that.
Sure.
All right. Any questions, commissioners?
No, thank you.
I only had one question, and that was in terms of the kayaking and the whitewater experience and the level of difficulty. Categorisation of that, isn't
well, it? Well, it is extraordinary that the Ophir Gorge, which most people don't experience, which is quite, you can only get to most of it in a whitewater kayaking, is grade four. Yeah, most of it is above me. And when you're in that gorge, it is like something out of the West Coast. It's quite a serious bit of white water. And it is an area where the kids, when they get to a certain grade, cut their teeth on. It's the closest area. It's like a few minutes from town.
Right.
And that our young kayakers go and pedal. So it's a really valuable resource in developing young kayakers.
The lower Nevis, grade four, is that?
Yes. Nevis is grade four too.
Yes.
Exactly. So it's similar to the lower Nevis.
Right. I did get to helicopter the lower Nevis and watch a DVD of people kayaking.
Well, you know your grades, So, it's
so
very,
that does give me
similar.
Some
yeah.
idea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Anything arising from court's questions? Okay, very good. All right, well, thank you very much for your evidence, and we'll see how we go.
Cheers.
Okay, so we're going to take the morning adjournment, and I think we have one more witness to come after that, so quarter of an hour. All right.
Please all stand.
Thank you.